Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Wired Podcast. I'm Renu Pundit.
And I'm Laura Minton.
And we're medical students at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. We wanted to do something about the fact that despite men and women graduating from medical school at near equivalent rates, only about a quarter of radiologists in the U.S. are women.
So we created Wired, the Women in Radiology Education Interest Group. Our passion is to support, inspire, and empower women through outreach events, personalized mentorship by connecting residents and attendings to learners, and creating opportunities for hands-on training for pre-medical and medical students to close the gender gap within the specialty.
In the midst of a global pandemic, while everyone felt the burden of isolation, we created a podcast as a means to share some incredible stories from our role models in radiology who inspire us daily by consistently paving the way for more representation and inclusion in the field.
It is our hope that by putting a spotlight on these women, this podcast can transform into an act of mentorship in itself by being a forum for the hopes, dreams, failures, and achievements of all women with a passion for radiology, from young, aspiring radiologists to pioneers who are already working to shape the field.
Today, we will be speaking with Dr. Lucy Spoluto. Dr. Spoluto is a radiologist with subspecialty training in breast imaging. She is the Vice Chair of Health Equity for the Department of Radiology and Radiological Sciences at Vanderbilt University Medical Center.
She is the immediate past president of the American Association for Women in Radiology and the director of Vanderbilt's Women in Radiology.
Hi, Dr. Spoluto. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing? And if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Absolutely. I've been really looking forward to speaking with you. Thank you for the invitation to share a little bit about my experience and hopefully encourage other women to pursue radiology. So I grew up in Florida, just outside of Orlando in a small town called Winter Park. I am the youngest of three girls. My two older sisters are also in the sort of science world. My oldest sister is a high school math teacher, and my middle sister is in the state of Georgia forestry department. She's got a master's in forestry and environmental planning. So we all pursued sort of science-driven careers. My father is a physician. And so I grew up in Florida. I went to undergrad at the University of Virginia and majored in biology. And then I took a year off after undergrad because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought I might want to go to med school, but I wasn't sure. And I knew it was a big commitment for something that I wasn't entirely sure about. So I took a year off. I lived in Richmond. I worked in a clinical lab at MCV, BCU, and sort of figured out what I wanted to do. Decided I really wanted to go to med school, and then I went to medical school at the University of Virginia. After med school, I did my internship in internal medicine at Cabrini Medical Center in Manhattan. So we lived in New York for 1 year, and then did my residency at Brown in Providence, Rhode Island, and then came here to Nashville for a fellowship in women's imaging.
When did you decide to pursue radiology?
So when I went into medical school, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. I thought at first that I might want to be a surgeon. And then it turned out that I really didn't like being in the OR that much, which would have been particularly challenging being a surgeon. And so I kind of took a step back, looked at all of the specialties a little bit more. Still even going through third year and rotating through clinical rotations, I still wasn't entirely sure what I wanted to do. Didn't really discover radiology until probably the end of my third year of medical school, and decided towards the end of my third year, beginning of my fourth year, that radiology was what I wanted to go into. Started looking into doing more radiology rotations and getting a little bit more experience and learning more about radiology. So kind of late in the scheme of things for deciding what I wanted to go into.
Did you ever experience self-doubt or failure in your academic journey up to that point?
It's a tough question. I think, you know, looking back, it ages me a little bit to look back at how far that was. So I was in medical school from 2002 to 2006. My medical school at the University of Virginia, I was the first part of the first class that had more women than men. So that was really encouraging to be surrounded by really bright women interested in making a difference in the field of medicine. And I can't remember any distinct moments of doubt beyond those that I assume other people have too, but maybe I'm wrong. I think there's always the wonder of whether you're going to be really good at what you do, and you're really going to make a difference for individual patients and beyond. But it's that hope that you can impact patients at the individual level and sort of the bigger institutional and public health levels that drove me to pursue the career that I have.
I feel like a lot of people have a stigma about radiology where they think that it's not a field where you can impact a lot of lives directly. What are your thoughts on that?
So that's one of the biggest reasons that I pursued the subspecialty that I did. So I did my fellowship in women's imaging. And the time I did my fellowship, it's kind of split half and half into OBGYN ultrasound imaging and breast imaging. And I really, one of the reasons I pursued this was because I loved the direct patient contact. So on the breast imaging side, which is really where I focus all of my clinical effort now, there is a tremendous opportunity for patient impact. I talk to so many of my patients when I'm giving them results during their diagnostic imaging. I'm going in, I'm doing ultrasound myself, I'm doing a lot of procedures. There's so much interaction with patients and their families and guiding them through the imaging experience that I think there is tremendous opportunity in radiology to interact with patients and to change their patient experience.
I totally agree. I wish more people knew that being a radiologist doesn't necessarily mean sitting alone in the dark all day. Thank you so much for sharing that.
So, Dr. Spoluto, what is a typical day for you?
Sure. So my, let me tell you a little bit about sort of my career path, which is potentially a little bit non-traditional compared to others. So I did my fellowship in women's imaging. And then I really wanted to stay on in academia afterwards. But at the end of my fellowship, they actually were not hiring at my institution. They were changing chairs that year. And oftentimes when they are changing chairs, the old chair won't be hiring anyone. He or she will be waiting for the new chair to decide which faculty members they want to hire. So there was a hiring freeze. And so I had to kind of decide if I wanted to stay in academia and move to a different location, or if I wanted to go into private practice. And at that time I decided to go into private practice for 2 years. I was in private practice here in Nashville for 2 years. And then a position opened up back at Vanderbilt, and I had to decide whether I was going to take that position at Vanderbilt or if I was going to stay in private practice. And I had always thought that decision would be really easy, that as soon as the position opened up at Vanderbilt, I would just go right back. I would kind of pretend the whole private practice thing never happened. But it actually ended up being a really hard decision for me to make. I really enjoyed the private practice where I worked. We did really high quality work. The other radiologists were highly trained and a great group of people to work with. And I loved the day-to-day work that I did, the patients that I took care of. So it became a really hard decision. I kind of had to think into the future of, you know, what did I want to be doing in 5 years or 10 years? And what did I want my sort of impact on the field of radiology to be. And that was the first time I really had to look at future Lucy sort of way down the road and decide what I wanted her to look like. And sort of making that list of pros and cons and looking into the future where I could be or what I wanted to do. That's when I ultimately made the decision to come back to Vanderbilt. I was on the clinical faculty doing pretty much straight clinical work for about 2 years. And then I started to get really interested more in research, in looking into addressing disparities in breast cancer outcomes, into the work that I do with our Women in Radiology group. And I realized that a lot of the work that I wanted to do required a more robust research skill set that I really didn't have at that time. And I recognized that I needed to further my research skill set to do the kinds of work that I really wanted to do. So I went back to school as an older person and did the Master's of Public Health program at Vanderbilt and a health services research fellowship through the VA called the VA Quality Scholars Program. It was a two-year fellowship and Master's of Public Health program. And since then, I finished that in 2019, so about 2 years ago. Since I've done my extra research training, my day-to-day work schedule looks much different than it did when I first started practicing radiology. So now I do about 1 to 2 days of clinical work a week, and the rest of my time is split between funded research time, some at the VA, some on the Vanderbilt side, and administrative time working on diversity and inclusion efforts for our department and health equity efforts for the department.
So, two questions. You mentioned that you had to kind of take a look at yourself and see kind of into the future what kind of impact that you would want to have on the field of radiology. Could you tell us more about like what exactly you saw when you kind of reflected on that? And then also just looking at where you are now, are you happy with your career choice? Do you love your job? Is there anything that you would change about it?
So what I started to think about the impact that I wanted to have, I looked at it in two ways. One is the direct impact that I have on the patients that I work with each day. And that was and is incredibly important to me. I want to make sure that I'm providing the highest level of high quality care that I can for the patients that I take care of. And I really enjoy the opportunity to interact with them directly and to share results with them and to help them form a plan of care. And so that individual level patient care is really important to me. But I also wanted to try to make an impact at a bigger, more public health level. And so the work that I do and sort of the work that I do focused on addressing cancer disparities or disparities in breast cancer outcomes focuses on that public health level. How are ways that I can work with women throughout the state and beyond to make sure that everyone has access to high quality care and that everyone has access to better breast cancer outcomes? And I see that as, you know, beyond the individual at the public health level. And then similarly on our diversity and inclusion efforts, how can I make an impact that will improve the way that women are perceived and work in the field of radiology?
Again, it's just so refreshing to hear someone mention that radiology can fulfill that desire to have a one-on-one patient care relationship, because I feel like it's a reason that so many people rule it out early on in medical school. Do you have more things that you want to accomplish in your career? Also, do you love your job?
I think there's always more to accomplish for all of us, but I do. Currently, I love my job. I love what I do. I love the mix of clinical work that I do with administrative and research work. I think that each piece has a different type of impact. Like I said, there's the individual clinical work where I'm working with patients directly. There's the research work, which has the potential to drive policy that drives more equitable patient care. There's the more administrative work within the department that changes our policies to support a more diverse and inclusive work environment so that we can foster the type of environment that attracts a really diverse workforce that can better serve our patient population.
What would you classify as your greatest personal accomplishment?
Personal accomplishment is tough to divide between. is it a work personal accomplishment? Is it a family or life personal accomplishment? I think one of our greatest accomplishments as a team here at Vanderbilt has been to really change and drive a culture of diversity and inclusion with our department, and being a part of that from kind of the beginning when Stephanie Spotswood started overseeing our efforts for diversity and inclusion in 2012, 2013, and seeing how much our department has has changed and how inclusive the work environment has become and how we can serve as a leader for other institutions to drive the same types of cultural change, I think is really gratifying.
What are your thoughts on the gender gap in radiology? And did this affect your decision to pursue it?
I think when I first went into radiology, I was pretty oblivious to the gender gap. Like I said, I was in a medical school class that was about half women, a little actually more than half women. When I started my radiology residency program, there were three women in my class, a class of seven, so just under half. One of the women in my class did transfer to another institution. So when we graduated, there were two women in my class. And if you averaged my whole residency program, it was on average with what the country was then and is now, which is, you know, about 25%-ish women. So I didn't really notice it until I was a resident. But we had some great women role models when I was a resident. Martha Monero was our program director. She's someone who I still work with and ask questions regularly. Anna Lorenko, another great woman leader in our field. And then my co-residents who I still work with on projects to this day. I think it's so important to establish your network and to continue to collaborate with people across institutions who you'll meet as medical students, residents, fellows, and continue to work with them throughout your career. So I have been fortunate to work with some really great role models along the way, all the way from residency through fellowship to the institution where I am, and then a lot of the national leadership roles that I've held through those organizations. I've been able to work with fantastic women leaders like Sherry Cannon, who started the GE SCARD LEAD program, and Carol Rumack through the AWR, and Elizabeth Arleo through the AWR. And I mean, I could go on and on. Susan Ackerman, Kasia Matsura. There are so many inspiring women in radiology, and so many of them are so very willing to take the time to spend with medical students and residents and share their personal journeys and offer resources and write letters. I think that radiology really is a very friendly field, and especially women in radiology, I think have done a great job of sort of sending the elevator down to help others to achieve leadership positions and to further their careers.
How do you respond to comments like you have opportunities because you're female and they're just trying to increase diversity?
You can always support any career success and roles that you've been awarded by demonstrating the skills that you have, the achievements that you have, and the documented successes that you have had in different areas. No one can ever take that away from you. Mm-hmm. You can, as people will say with research or anything else, the data doesn't lie. So if you're ever presented with backlash from someone who says that you have been awarded something that you don't deserve, you can easily fire right back by listing all of the reasons that you are qualified for those roles. Don't let anyone ever tell you that you are not qualified for a position that you are qualified for.
I love that advice, and you're right. No one can ever take your accomplishments away from you. What are your thoughts about competition versus collaboration? Do you think that having more women in radiology improves patient outcomes overall?
I think there's plenty of room at the table for everyone.
Absolutely.
I think we mentioned earlier, you know, there's always work to be done. And I find that a collaborative approach to work is so much more successful than an individual approach. That's been one of my favorite things about working in the fields of health equity and diversity and inclusion, is that it tends to be very collaborative work and inter and intra-institutional work. So I've I've been able to work with a great team here at Vanderbilt within my department, across other departments, and then oftentimes across other institutions. And I find that the more people we bring to the table, the more diverse the thoughts are that we bring to the table, the better the work is that we do. And so I think there is so much opportunity for collaboration. I don't think we should ever be deterred thinking that, you know, the work's already all been done or there's too many leaders in the field already, that there isn't room for anyone else. I think that there's so much opportunity for our trainees to get involved and early, mid, and later career perspectives to be incorporated into really all aspects of radiology. So I think that there's no reason to assume that the table was full.
You mentioned that you do a lot of work with diversity and inclusion. How have you opened the door for more women to enter the field of radiology, and what other efforts by others have inspired you?
So one of the opportunities that I've been fortunate to have is working with the American Association for Women in Radiology. I'm currently the immediate past president for the organization, and people often ask, you know, what is the value of the AWR? You know, you put so much of your time into it, was it worth it? And the answer is absolutely. I think the true value is the relationships built and the network of women that I have gained through our meetings and serving in the different leadership roles that I've held is, you know, knowing people across the country who have connections. So if I have a question or if I have a trainee who's interested in a certain area who needs some mentorship, I can go beyond my own institution to work with them. And so the AAWR has been tremendously successful in increasing the visibility of women in radiology. So the organization's been around for about 40 years, and Carol Rumack talks about, you know, when she started the organization 40 years ago, you know, women weren't really giving many national talks and were really having a hard time finding jobs. They couldn't get hired. Often they were told straight to their face that they weren't going to be hired because the men or partners were afraid that the woman would get pregnant and she would be out. And so it was a much different environment than it is now. And so I think being a part of an organization like this that has championed the efforts of women in radiology and championed the encouraging radiology to become a field more inclusive of the needs of women in radiology has really been a bright spot in my career. And so I think that becoming involved in organizations like the AWR or the ACR Commission for Women and Diversity, these national groups or organizations that have the potential to really drive national policy change and to change the way that institutions, the work environments that institutions support and how gender inclusive they are, is a great opportunity for anyone to get involved with. At our institution, we started our overall diversity and inclusion efforts back in around 2012 or 2013. We started our Women in Radiology initiative in late 2014, early 2015. So it's been about 5 years. And to see the impact that these initiatives have had on our department and on encouraging more underrepresented minority students and women to pursue radiology has been really rewarding. I think one of the most important things that any of us can do as radiologists to encourage more women and underrepresented minority students to go into radiology is to introduce them to radiology earlier, whether it's in middle school or high school or undergrad or medical school, whenever it may be. If there is a learner at any age interested in radiology, you know, share with them, share what your day-to-day work life is like, what you love about radiology, what you might find challenging about radiology, what a typical day is like, how we actually impact patient care on so many levels and have the opportunity to interact with patients directly. I think that sharing and being open and encouraging earlier career trainees to pursue radiology really has the potential to make a huge difference.
We love that. Honestly, continuing the pipeline is such an essential part of Wired's mission and our own personal goals as mentors.
Yeah, we're actually planning an event this summer with Girls Inc. of Central Alabama, where we'll teach young girls ultrasound techniques and introduce them to aspects of radiology as a career choice. We'll have to keep you posted on how it goes.
I think that's great. And I think it makes a huge, huge difference. So I was fortunate that, you know, when I was younger, my father was a physician. So I understood sort of what the usual process was, you know, to go to medical school and then you do an internship and then you do a residency. And I think some people, you know, if you aren't exposed to medicine at an earlier age, you just, that journey on its own is mm-hmm. so confusing and not knowing what the steps are. And so I understood, you know, the general process of what it took to become a practicing physician, not a radiologist specifically, but a practicing physician. But for someone who doesn't, and or doesn't know anyone in medicine, that can be a very daunting thing to consider. And so I think really it's this transparency and mm-hmm. inviting people to share the radiology experience, I think can make a big difference.
I completely agree. Can you tell us about your hobbies and family and how you integrate work-life balance into your career?
Sure. So I have two young children. Well, I guess they're not so young anymore. They're growing up. My kids are 7 and 9, so they're in first and third grade. And they are very independent individuals, which I appreciate. I probably appreciate more when they're a little bit older, but so they are full of life and energy, and most of our free time is in a great way spent with my kids. So my daughter plays soccer and my son plays baseball, and my husband actually works in baseball. So baseball is a big part of our lives, and we spend, you know, a lot of afternoons at either the baseball field, at the soccer field, and then at tournaments and games on the weekends. One of our activities that we were working on really just prior to the pandemic, we're going to resume soon, as we are trying as a family to go to all 30 Major League Baseball stadiums together. And we, I think, are at 7 right now. We were hoping to get a few more under our belt in 2020, but there was, as we all know, a lot of events that prevented doing anything in the national social forum. So we hope to resume that soon. But that's been some of our more fun family goals. But we like to travel together as a family, and that's much of my non-work life is focused on my family. I feel like I've been able to create a pretty good harmony between work activities and non-work activities. And there's always a little bit of creep on both sides, I think. My day-to-day work schedule, as I said, I do about 1 to 2 clinical days a week, and the rest is administrative and research. And so my clinical days are pretty pretty fixed in the hours, and being able to leave and do other things during those times, which limits flexibility a little bit. But my other time, my research and administrative time, I'm able to flex a little bit if I need to. So if I want to go to one of my kids' school plays, or something comes up, I need to take one of them to the doctor, I'm able to flex that daytime work a little bit. I do end up flexing sometimes into night or weekend time, but I'm pretty happy to do some work at night and on weekends to have that daytime flexibility. I've found that is, it's really meaningful to me to be able to have a little bit of control over my schedule.
I think that's great. I love how you found a balance that is meaningful to you. I think because medicine is such a captivating field, it can be hard to find that work-life balance and flexibility. But at the end of the day, I think our identities aren't just reduced to our occupation. And I admire that you have created the flexibility to be someone outside of medicine, like being a mom to your kids.
Speaking of COVID, how did that impact like your daily work life and just, you know, stuff like that?
Yeah, really, as a family and as a physician.
I would say it completely turned us upside down. So I guess it was about a year ago, you know, sort of mid-March 2020. My kids were in kindergarten and second grade at the time, and they basically left for spring break in mid-March and just didn't go back. You know, they were out of school for the rest of the year. And we were hesitant to bring someone else into our household to watch them or to send them somewhere else, because we were trying to be really cognizant of isolating ourselves from other people and other people from ourselves. My husband works from home, so he fortunately was sort of limited in the interaction that he needed to have, but I still needed to go in and do clinical work. So I was sort of the weak link, I guess, in exposure. So my kids were home. My husband was home. I was doing a lot of my research and administrative work from home. So that was new to us to have all of us in the house at the same time, trying to do my husband working, me working, both of us trying to teach school and parent and survive all at the same time. So the first few months were really hard. And I am thankful that, you know, we are all well, we did not get sick, our parents are well. And I am very cognizant of the fact that it was much harder for many other people. But I think that COVID impacted everyone. It changed your life, no matter who you are, where you are, what you do. And it was challenging for us to sort out our new daily schedules and how we were going to get things done. But we all grew because of it. I think my kids became a little bit more independent. My husband and I learned a little bit more about what we each do for work, probably. Mm-hmm. We learn more about what our kids are doing in school since we had the pleasure of teaching it to them for several months. And then we eventually became, you know, a little bit more comfortable. My kids are back in school for this school year, which I'm very thankful for. Lots of safety precautions in place, and I am amazed by the resiliency of children. You know, they put their mask on, they go to school. It's just like any other day. They don't complain about it. They've just they've been so accepting and resilient and appreciative that they're able to go to school. So it changed everything, and I think while it was very challenging, to try to figure out how we were going to maneuver through COVID and the challenges it presented us, I think that we were able to do as well as we could. I think particularly, so in the clinical world, scheduling was definitely hard because, you know, if you go to clinical work and you have small children, you have to have someone to watch your children if they can't go to school. You either have to find a daycare that's open or someone who is going to come in. So that's definitely a challenge if you're going in to do clinical work. Mm-hmm. If you are an academic, it's like a different challenge because you can try to do it from home, but it's so much harder. It's, you know, constant interruptions. I read one article and it just made me laugh out loud because it said something like your kids interrupt you like 14 times an hour. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. Everybody else. And, you know, to think about, you know, doing data analysis or writing a paper when you're getting interrupted 14 times an hour takes so much longer, and is exhausting because it's taking you longer. You know, you're trying to get things done during the day. You're also taking care of your kids during the day. Then they go to bed. Then you're like really going to have some quiet time, but then, you know, you're only going to sleep for 2 hours. So it was definitely a challenging time.
Do you have any advice that you would tell other parents in medicine or people who would like to become parents, but they're afraid that it will affect their medical career?
Someone actually asked me this recently. So they said, you know, when is the right time to have kids if you're thinking about pursuing a medical career? And I think there is no right time. The right time is whenever it's the right time for you. You know, there's always going to be a reason to not start your family. You can always think of something. But I think, I know I have friends who had children while we were in medical school. One of my good friends had twins when we were in medical school. One of my co-residents had her baby when we were a fellow, or when we were residents. I had my first child when I was a fellow. I had my second child when I was in private practice. So, and there are good things and bad things about each of those points in time. And I think that the system hopefully is becoming a little bit more family friendly in general. But I think it's really, really important to not let your job or profession dictate your family life. If you give up that control to your career, if you give up the control over your family life to your career, I think it's one of the things that you would look back on and wish you hadn't done. I think there is always a way to make it work.
Absolutely. So I want to move into a few controversial topics. I'm just joking. But how has public health and radiology affected by the COVID pandemic? I've read articles about things like screening, and I'm curious how that changed in 2020 and how that's changing now in 2021.
So on the breast imaging side, it definitely impacted our clinical workload. So sort of the second half of March and April last year, we really almost closed our doors just due to COVID protocols. So not wanting to put people at risk of contracting a potentially deadly illness to have an annual screening exam. You know, looking at the risk-benefit ratio for the patients and for medical personnel.
Right.
So that was a big impact, you know, breast cancer screening, lung cancer screening. There was really a big shutdown when the pandemic first began. And I think now the field of radiology is really looking into how do we appropriately respond to move forward. Now we're looking at, you know, the COVID vaccine and the potential for imaging side effects due to the vaccine and what are appropriate protocols to move forward with. Like should women delay screening mammography after they receive the COVID vaccine, given the potential for reactive axillary adenopathy? Or if you tell people to delay, are they more likely to just forget to come at all and they wouldn't come until the next year? And if we are going to try to implement protocols like that, would they potentially impact different populations differently? Or would certain populations maybe who have a language barrier or an education level barrier potentially not understand the change in protocol and be negatively impacted by a change? I think there's a huge amount of consideration for public health in radiology and the COVID-19 pandemic screening and beyond, you know, thinking about how can we ensure that our patients feel safe coming for any type of imaging? How can we relay the messages that imaging is still important, even though there is a COVID-19 pandemic going on? If you had recommendations for a follow-up, or if you are symptomatic and need a certain type of imaging, you should still have that done, even though there's a pandemic going on. So I think there are a lot of considerations for radiology during the pandemic.
What are some goals that you're currently working towards?
So many goals, always. So one of the new positions that I recently took on at our institution, I'm our vice chair for health equity, which means I oversee our initiatives to design educational programming for the department, both for faculty and trainees, to share more about existing health disparities in radiology and ways that we might be able to help overcome them, to foster a research interest for trainees and faculty members in radiology, and to try to engage our department more with the community so that we can better understand the community that we're serving. And so my current goals are to really drive forward the mission of our health equity initiative for our department.
And pertaining to the advancement of women, for any women in any stage of their training or anyone who's interested, who's listening to this podcast, if you had one wish or piece of advice, what would it be?
I would encourage all women who are either in radiology or thinking about going radiology to never be afraid. Don't be afraid to pursue something that interests you. Don't be afraid of someone telling you no. Don't be afraid to be yourself. I think that's really important. And that's something that I wished I'd learned earlier, is that you should never be afraid to be yourself, to share your ideas, to stand up for yourself.
That's great advice. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Dr. Spolito, and for sharing your advice and your story. We really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me. This has been a really great conversation.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of the Wired Podcast. We hope this story opened your eyes to a new role model, piqued your interest in a new career trajectory, or exposed you to the fact that failure and struggle are normal hurdles, even in the paths of the greatest women. Feel free to connect with us on Instagram at @wired.uab or on Twitter @wired_UAB. See you next time.
This podcast would not have been possible without the mentorship we received by our faculty mentor, Dr. Desmond Milner, and resident advisors, Dr. Kathy Chin, Dr. Mary Beth Oglesby, and Dr. Adrian Murray.